Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and joining me right now is Yana Shanaeus and Max Cohen. This is a very special episode, as I'm calling this our 3-in-1 show, because we will be reviewing the end of the transfer window for Fulham. That should be interesting. After that, we will be doing a post-match show of the Fulham victory against Brighton Hove Albion. That'll be fun. And then at the very end of the show, we're going to be previewing the upcoming match against Crystal Palace. And that's a match I'm really looking forward to. It's a great opportunity for Fulham to get all 3 points. That's how I feel about that. Before I bring on my co-host, I do want to mention another walk from my friends at London Call and Calm. They are walking from Craven Cottage to Selhurst Park on Saturday at 10 a.m. There will be Fulham supporters there and supporters from Crystal Palace. It's for a good cause. If you're interested, please do meet up at Craven Cottage around that time. They do wonderful things creating awareness for this group, Calm. I would highly recommend, if you want to walk, walk with my friends. They are great people, and they're doing such a good job creating awareness. All right, guys, time to start the show. Mr. Janaeus, I'm going to start with you. So, what did you think about the end of the transfer window for Fulham? I guess we don't have much to talk about.
No, it was bloody underwhelming. It was terrible. Where's Stefan Johansson? Well, it's funny. The question was going to be, are we going to buy players to try and ensure that we get them to stay up, or are we going to go the other way and try and set up for maybe if we were to get relegated? And it looks like we've done neither. The weaknesses that we have in this squad have not been addressed. At the back, it still looks acceptable. And right now, there are a lot of Fulham fans on social media who are very, very pissed. And I can't blame them, because it looks like it's another example of us doing everything in the 11th hour and not getting things over the line. So it's been a little underwhelming, to be honest. It looks like our best signing was Ryan Babel.
that was a few weeks ago, my friend.
And that was a few weeks ago. You're absolutely right.
Okay, well, we're going to go through all of the signings in just a second, but before I do that, I want to go over to you, Max. We have a lot to talk about with the end of the transfer window. We have a couple signings, and we have something that never happened. We thought it was going to happen. We hoped it would happen, but it didn't go through. We'll talk about that as well. What are your thoughts about the end of the transfer window?
Yeah, Giannis is absolutely right. We needed defenders. We needed center backs. I think we needed a right back. And we could have done with a holding midfielder. And at the end of the day, we got kind of a hybrid of two of those. We got Harvard Nordveit, who I think we can kindly say has been a Premier League reject. He's very highly rated in Germany in the Bundesliga.
Yes.
I think that's a positive. But as everyone knows, his time in West Ham was essentially a failure. And for all we've harped on about getting Premier League experience, he's one who has Premier League experience, but it's kind of the wrong one. It's not what we want. And at the end of the day, no more center. I mean, he's a center back who can play holding midfielder. It's unclear what his best position is. People are saying defensive midfielder. Right now, I think Callum Chambers probably has a position on lockdown, so it's not really a position of real need for me. So we haven't really strengthened there. And the right back, Christie, I think, was probably the biggest weak point. Anyone who watched the Brighton match saw that he was probably the weak point in that first half. He's been better in recent weeks, but we know he's not Premier League quality. We needed a right back. And we tried to go for Youssef Sabalai. Didn't go through whatever reason. I think it's going to be an embarrassment that we left to the last minute, as always. But the fact of the matter is, we don't have any new out-and-out defenders. We just don't. We're going to have to go through this relegation dogfight with essentially a championship defense. And not only a championship defense, Russ, but I always say this, a championship defense who's probably bottom half of the table championship, right? Because Christy can get a game for us in the second half of the season. Joe Bryan played for Bristol, didn't get promoted, and Dennis Adore is mainly a backup for most of the season. So it's not even a good championship defense. It's a poor championship defense, and that's what we're going to have to work with.
Okay, very strong comments there, my friend. And listen, there's no way of getting around that, because I thought that they needed a right back really badly, and we'll talk about what didn't happen. You've already mentioned it a little bit. Then they bring in this player, Håvard Nordtveit, and he's a defensive midfielder and center back. He's versatile. And I've seen tweets that his better position is a defensive midfielder. And then I've seen others that have said, obviously, that he can play both. Like you mentioned, he's versatile. But that also gets me to think, well, what is Claudio Ranieri going to do? And Max, I'll go to you first, and then I'm going to go to Giannis, because I actually saw someone tweet this out, just talked about the possibility of this. I'm not saying doing it. I'm just saying, well, you do have Callum Chambers, who is a center back. Do you risk moving him back to center back if Nordtveit's better position is defensive midfielder? Do you think about it?
I mean, no. For me, that's wrong, because Chambers has been, I'd say, our brightest player, the exception maybe of Mitrovic, ever since Ranieri took over. And honestly, in Solis' last match, right, that was when Chambers first played as a defensive midfielder. That's been the biggest storyline for me. So to change that, one of the only probably positive aspects of these past matches since November would be a mistake. So, and I can't see how Nordtveit, who hasn't played with this team, slotting in ahead of Chambers, who I think has been one of the team's best players. That's the wrong decision for me.
Okay.
And Chambers, remember, he was terrible at defense, right? Remember that Swansea match? Remember that Cardiff match? I remember the Watford match?
Yep.
I mean, two were really the worst performances I can remember, honestly, in the back four.
Okay, very good. Giannis, your thoughts on the potential of Håvard Nordtveit with Fulham? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, if I was Scott Parker, I'd be pretty pissed off, because he's done such a brilliant job in terms of, you know, developing Chambers in the defensive central midfielder that can do a job. And with the greatest respect to Chambers, he really wasn't very good as a centre-back for us. He was, you know, so there was a big problem there. And the other little piece of the nonsense that sort of annoys me is the Timothy Fosu-Mensah rubbish, because now we're stuck with him. Ranieri's not going to pick him. That's a loan signing down the toilet. And meanwhile, we have six or seven wingers. I mean, it doesn't make any sort of sense. And look, we've all known since the start of the transfer window, it's not rocket science. We have the worst defense in any top league in Europe.
Yeah.
So guess what? We need defensive cover. We need upgrades. And it's not even cover. We need upgrades, for crying out loud. And what have we done? We've done bollocks, right? Because we can't keep clean sheets. And then at the 11th hour, we try and get defenders in. We try and sort out the Fosu-Mensah thing. Fosu-Mensah's not an idiot. He's thinking, well, if I go back to Old Trafford, I'm not playing in the U21s. So he's going to try and play here. The only problem is right here, he's not going to pick him.
Yeah.
Right, so you've basically got you might as well rename him Dead Duck, because he's not going to play. And Nordtveit, well, that's just great, but you upset the rhythm of the team. If he's a bona fide centre back,
yep,
then you go, okay, fair enough, that makes sense. But if you put him now in the middle, you know, as a DCM, and you put Chambers back, you're setting back Chambers' development, and not forgetting, of course, that Chambers is a lone player.
Right.
You know what it looks like? It just looks
This is just a suggestion on Twitter. I'm not saying that they're going to do this. I'm just saying that this is a suggestion that someone had because of what others were saying about Nordtveit, that he's been very good as a defensive midfielder from what I was reading. You know, again, I haven't watched him, so again, I can't really judge. I'm just trying to think of how Ranieri will use him. Will he just put him in as a center back and just stick with the status quo, because Chambers has flourished in the defensive midfielder role? That's the reason why I'm bringing it up.
And the problem right now is Tim Ream's shot. I mean, his confidence is shot. He's got pulled after 20 against Brighton. And, you know, I mean, it could be farcical. We could have a good laugh here and say, well, we didn't concede a goal in 73 minutes against Brighton, which is true. But we don't exactly inspire the greatest of confidence. I mean, teams know that they'll eventually be able to break us down.
Yeah.
So we look paper thin at the back. We've got championship level defenders.
Well, you know who they are, Giannis. This group, and I was just thinking about this, and tell me if I'm wrong, because Fulham had a center back that would always make one mistake a match. the defense really is like a group of Philip Senderosses because they always seem to make a mistake.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not, serious.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. And, oh, my God, I can't. Send the horse. We love the send the horse.
He would make at least one mistake a match that would kill you, and that's what that's this right. defense does.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And that doesn't inspire, you know, people have been going on about Sergio Rico coming off his line.
Yeah.
But to be fair, I mean, he's a super shot stopper. You saw that, you know, the save off Murray. I mean, I thought he was brilliant against. I thought he was brilliant against Brighton. I don't think there's anything he could have done about Murray's goals. But he's got to have a back four he can really trust. And it's like, you know, you get home from school and you say, "Mom, what's for dinner?" And your mum goes, "Oh, I just got in and I'm tired." And she just puts a load of old bollocks in a saucepan, puts a bit of oil in and just pipes, you know, fries it for 3 minutes. And goes, "Here you go, bit of bubble and squeak." It's like it's been put together last minute. It looks like it's an impulsive plan based on reactionary thinking when all of us as fans know what's going on. We can see it week in, week out, game in, game out. And Tony Khan is just mysterious. It's like he's looking at another team. And so Nordvik, you know, for whatever, you know, whatever reputation he brings, the problem is if you're scouting against him, against Fulham, you're going, "Well, we're going to get a goal or two against these clowns."
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're very poor at the back.
They needed upgrades, Giannis, and I think that's your point. Nothing against this player. I'm going to give Harvard Nordvik every chance to succeed. You know, he has a clean slate with me, but I understand where you're going on this because you wanted someone that came in that you knew was going to be an upgrade, and on paper, it doesn't look like that. He could do a job for them, but at this point, we just don't know.
Yeah, and I'll give Tony Khan a little bit of a leeway. I mean, I know in the sense that there was the offer that was put in for Gary, for our friend
Gary Cahill.
Gary Cahill, and it's turned out he's even turned down a move to Juventus. So that makes him a bit of an idiot, to be honest.
Yeah,
because if you get paid that much, what does that say for you? That you he said, "I want to fight for my you know, place in the starting 11." Don't talk bollocks. Sarri's not going to pick you, and they've just lost 4-0 to Bournemouth. And if you think now that you're going to get a game, you still won't. So that's an indictment against the modern football in many ways. Someone who's going, "Well, I've got my money, and you know, I'll get paid every week." Nobody cares. But we've had a month, and in fact, we haven't had a month. We've had months to put the groundwork in and what have you to prepare for what was inevitable, because we've had that kind of start, and yet we couldn't get anything over the line. You can't blame Ranieri and the coaches. You've got to look at whoever, you know, the man who's running this operation in terms of the player personnel, isn't it? And it's been a DiCaprio Winslet disaster.
Yeah,
you know, it's a Titanic mess, and we're just sitting here having a laugh, going, "Well, we've got Palace on Saturday."
Well, it's not funny. This isn't funny.
No,
Giannis.
It's not. It's going to be a tough game, all the enthusiasm we had after that brilliant win on Tuesday, it's just been deflated. The pin's gone in the balloon.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate because I'm looking forward to talking about that victory, and then obviously talking about the Palace match. And I still think Fulham have a very good chance to get all 3 points. I want to say that. But I understand why it's deflating now for the two of you. But let's talk about another sign that, again, it just happened just as we started to record. Max actually gave me the heads up that Fulham had signed Lazar Markovic. It's on a free transfer, and it's just for the end of the season. He's 24-year-old winger who played at Liverpool. And over to you, Max. What are your thoughts on this? And again, I'm reading from the Fulham website, and apparently he got a good recommendation from Alexander Mitrovic. So that has some weight with me. But I'm looking at bringing in this player, and I'm just thinking they needed defenders. Maybe it's wrong of me to look at it that way.
No, I think you're right. I think if this transfer happens any other time in January. Literally any other time except when it did happen, I'm happy with this. Because it's completely risk-free. He's on a free transfer. It's only until the end of the season. We haven't committed big wages or a big contract. And he's 23 years old. He's potential. This is a man who impressed Liverpool at times. Never really worked out for him. He's been basically on many, many loans since. I remember with the Hull in a similar situation in January when they went down with Marco Silva. He's been to, I think, Anderlecht. I think he's been to Portugal with Lisbon. None of those things have worked out for him, and now he's a full-on a permit. He's finally left Liverpool. He's 24. He's a pacey winger. I think this, in some part, goes to replacing Kamara, who's just left on loan. Obviously, not the same player, but more attacking options. It means we no longer have to put the likes of Aite on the bench, Giannis, like that. It means Cabano probably won't get any more substitute appearances, which I think...
That's a good point.
So it's smart. I think
he's taking the place of Kamara. I didn't think of it that way. That's actually a good way to look at it.
So I'm actually happy with this transfer. It gets me a little bit excited. That being said, when it comes to the last chance on a deadline day, when everyone is crying out for a defender, it's just the feeling is overwhelming disappointment, especially because, you know, Fulham tweeted out, listen, stay up, lads. You've got one more announcement coming. Yep. And it's this. There's naturally going to be some disappointment, animosity, anger. That's all understandable. But listen, it's not the worst move in the world. It's just not exactly what we needed. I mean, everyone would have traded a defender for Markovic. We have Markovic. We don't have a defender. That's just the way it is.
Okay, very good. Giannis, over to you. Thoughts of the free transfer of Lazar Markovic?
Well, I didn't know that I didn't know that Mitro was now the director of player personnel at Fulham.
That's funny.
I mean, he's a god. He scores with his both feet. He scores with his head. He celebrates with the crowd and he makes signings. I mean, this guy's got 131 appearances in 9 years. Now he's, you know, he's 24, so he's the same age, I think, same age as Mitro. The only thing I can think of here might be where Mitro has got on the phone to Markovic and said, now look, your career's been a bit of a mess, but if you can come over here, you might be able to resurrect this, because this is a good club to come to, and you could really do a job to help us and secure your next contract. Because I think he went to Liverpool for 20 million and he was a bust there, and then things fell through, really went south for him. From the moment he went out, I think Fenerbahce took him, and then he went to Portugal, and then he went to bloody, let's not forget, he played for Hull City 2 years
ago. He did. Yep.
And then he went to Anderlecht, and there was a problem when he showed up because he was so overweight that he didn't play for 6 weeks. So there've been some concerns about his conditioning and self-regulation in terms of fitness and nutrition. But again, could the Serbian connection make a difference here? It might do. This could turn out to be, you know, Boo Boo had to go. The only thing he hadn't done was send, you know, a London Underground train to blow up the Houses of Parliament. That's about the only thing he's not done. The last 2 weeks has all been happening, fights and penalties and all that nonsense. So he had to go, and he's gone. But this might just be a master signing. I'm just really worried. Have you ever heard of can you imagine a Tom Brady saying, well, pick up this linebacker from the Browns, he's good.
And that wouldn't happen, by the way.
It would not happen. Exactly. It wouldn't happen.
And nothing against Tom Brady or Mitro. It just wouldn't happen with the Patriots.
And you're talking about the best player, probably the best. The best quarterback in the history of the National Football League.
Yeah, Belichick's not going to make a decision because Brady recommended him. He's going to do it because he's the right player for the team. He's not going to do it based on a recommendation.
That's the thing, and that's why this looks really comical that you put on a website, he's come recommended from Mitrovic. How second rate does that actually look? It does actually. It's like saying, you know, oh well, we picked up Northlight, and we got on the phone with Stefan Johansson because he's Norwegian, and also Erik Nevland and Brede Hangeland had put in a good word for him too. We decided we're going to get him. You know, of course you wouldn't run, you shouldn't run a club like that. It's sort of a little farcical. So we can have a giggle, but you know that Fulham fans are pissed because we don't look any better than we did, you know, 24 hours ago.
I don't know, and that's the problem with this, Giannis, is because, again, I want to give Nordveit every chance to succeed with Fulham Football Club, and I hope he does. I just don't know, and I think, you know, when we look at what they needed, and we're going to talk about what didn't happen in just a second, because that's the one that is really deflating to me, is that I thought they really needed a right back. They needed a center back, and yes, Nordveit might be a center back, and we're just going to have to see if that's how he's going to be used. That's how I think they're going to use him. Both of you feel that it would be a mistake to make him a defensive midfielder to shake up things with Callum Chambers. So, okay, fine. So hopefully he can step right in and do a job. And I hope he does. But they still needed upgrades. I don't know if he's an upgrade yet. And that's the whole thing. I wanted to see upgrades. And that's going to lead me to talk about what didn't happen. And Max, I want to go back and forth with you on this because there's a lot of speculation on exactly what didn't happen with a potential deal for Youssef Sabaleh from Bordeaux, a right back. Fulham desperately needed a right back, Max. I think you're going to agree with me on this. I was following all the speculation all morning, all afternoon, and into the night, hoping that this would get done. And I started hearing conflicting reports out of England that it was looking like it could potentially happen, reports out of France saying the exact opposite. And now we have opposite conflicting reports, one coming from England and one coming from France, that are saying different things on why this deal did not happen, Max. So I want to get your thoughts on, basically, as a Fulham supporter, they needed a right back. And do I blame Fulham for this not happening? I don't blame them for not happening. I don't have enough details. We do not exactly know what happened here. If I'm going to blame them, it is for waiting for the last minute to try to make a deal happen. And this is what happens at the end of the transfer window. But based on what I've been reading, I just have a feeling that another club that's involved with this, Bordeaux, had a hand in why this thing didn't happen. So I can't fully blame Fulham on this, because I think Bordeaux had a lot to do with this thing not happening. Your thoughts?
Yeah, let's just say we should always, always, always steer clear of business with Bordeaux. Because who remembers the Diego Rolón fiasco a couple of years ago? I mean, it just really seems like a club run by really second-rate people. I mean, the report that they didn't pick up the phone.
Regardless, I find this whole thing unprofessional by Bordeaux.
No, it's sad to say. It's not befitting of a professional football club. And, you know, maybe that's why they call Liga the Farmers League. Maybe they're out tending the crops late at night. Who knows? But, I mean, at the end of the day, you're right. Don't leave your best business until the very last minute. And I know that's the nature of the January transfer window. I know it's a business negotiation. Both sides want the best possible deal for each other, and that means negotiations are going to go until the very last minute. But if you know you're dealing with a somewhat unreliable partner, you don't leave it until the night of January 31st. You know it's a pressing concern. We didn't just realize, oh no, Christie isn't good enough tonight. We've known that for the past year, honestly, I'd say. Ever since he signed, he hasn't been good enough, right? So this is nothing new. This is nothing last minute. We should have been targeting right back from the off. And if we were targeting right back from the off, the question has to be, why did it take this long? Why did the deal have to be gone in the last minute? Now, I'll be honest. I don't know about you, Russ. I don't know about you, Giannis, but I've never heard of the player before today. So I can't go out here and say, listen, we should have been this guy from day one. That's going to be a bit hypocritical. So we have to say to Tony Khan, give him some credit. They're dealing with a limited pool. They're looking for players who are bargains who not everyone knows about, and that's always going to be difficult, yes. But, I mean, the news that he came over, I've heard he was doing an MRI scan in New Malden Hospital. He was in the London area. Yep. He was on a private plane. He was in, you know, London. He was here in the UK. And all that to happen and the deal not be done is just incredibly disappointing. And it really does feel like a player who I had no emotional investment in before, probably today, this afternoon, never heard of him. Maybe that's false. Maybe that's bad on me because I think he is a Senegalese international. the point is he's not a household name. But I just feel so devastated for a player I've never even attached to just a day ago. And that's the nature of January. And it's madness. You know, the whole state of modern football is just made around these transfer windows. And it's mad because you just have so much stake in it and can feel it just taken away from you. It's gutting.
It is. It totally is. And Giannis, over to you. I want your thoughts on this. Like I mentioned, we are getting conflicting reports. One coming from France that, you know, and again, I'm going to read this from Get French Football News, because Sky Sports had a report that Fulham had met this release clause and that they had been trying to call Bordeaux and then also trying to email Bordeaux and they weren't responding. This is a tweet from Get French Football News, and it states, Sky Sports completely wrong on Youssef Sablé. With Fulham, player has no release clause. Any deal was dependent on Bordeaux signing a replacement, and they didn't. So that's from Get French Football News. This is just a huge mess.
Yeah.
But regardless, Fulham don't have a right back. So I'm upset anyways.
Yeah, that's right. You've got right now, you've got Cyrus Christie, and the only other option could be Steven Sessegnon. Right now, you don't. I mean, Fosu Mensah will not play another game for this club. You know, I mean, it's that simple. He had the option to go
He's
back.
He's been phased out. He's probably upset the club that he wouldn't go back. So why would
and
they play him?
And we've just, and probably more importantly, we've lost the opportunity of a loan deal. Because
what I mean.
Yes, this bugger won't go back. The only other thing I'm thinking of now, as an option, and we'll see if anything transpires here. And I'm sure that Tony Khan is going to be reading, watching, listening to social media. Is if by
he's not
going to
like this show, I'll tell you that.
No, he won't. But if he's smart and he's on the ball in this one, he's going to take a look at any potential free agents that might be out there now. Are there free agents out there that maybe he can pick up? Because there are players that are looking for contracts. And there might be a chance you can get a short-term deal for someone who can come in and do a job. Because there are a lot of players out there, not just here, but in Europe, that can do that. But the right-back situation right now is acute. Because you've got no cover. So, I mean, how it rectifies itself, I'm not sure. What I do know is that we've known for months that this has been a major, major problem. And we've been sort of a bit snake-bitten as well, guys, because, you know, Tim Ream was our best player last year, but was injured before, you know, he got a concussion before the season, and he's not been the same fella. Alfie Mawson has been a walking sick note.
Yep.
Right? So Dennis Adoy, we love him to death, but he's a championship defender who's had a few good performances, but we know it. Joe Bryan came from the championship, from Bristol City. You know, Maxime Le Marchand has done all right, but this as a unit, this is not good enough to sustain you in a division this good. It really doesn't. So
I agree.
Our biggest Achilles heel, Russ, has been defensively, we've not been good enough. So we will know this. Find a Fulham fan that will go, no, I like my back four. No, because, I mean, it won't happen. So if we all know this, then why is it we've waited for the 11th hour with the potential for screw-ups? And that's what's happening. If you make the offers early on and a Bordeaux turn around and go, I'm not having any of this because we can't sign a defender in the meantime, then there's time for the deal to get over the line. But at the 11th hour, you'll often find a lot of teams will receive bids but go, but wait a minute, we've got no replacement. We can accept the bid, but then who comes in to fill the spot? And that, to be fair to Bordeaux, that's probably what they've done. They've got cold feet. They've realized, you know what? We don't have enough cover. What do we do? We're gonna do a UE and we're gonna renege on a deal or potential deal. To be fair, but that's the opportunity cost of playing the Russian roulette of making deals at the 11th hour. It's you're asking for trouble. And we've seen it. Tony Khan is going to come in, is already coming in for some huge vitriol. And he can't say he can't be blamed. He can't say, well, I'm not responsible. You have to be proactive in every transfer window. It's really that simple. And he's not done that. So now we have Palace on Saturday, a game, you know, we without Zaha there, we got a chance of getting something. But we've got some games.
That's
coming
right.
Up. Yeah, but yeah, Matsui, yeah. That's right. That's the other problem. He might play, and we've got some games where we could get clobbered because defensively, we could create chances, but defensively, we're leaky. So, Ranieri, I thought for a penny for Ranieri's thoughts, you know, I mean, he's probably sitting there going, well, what is this? What are we doing here? But mind you, all is well because Mitro has picked out Markovic, so we're saved.
Okay. Before we move on, a couple of things. First of all, thoughts on Stefan Johansson going on loan, Max?
It's sad because, you know, he's a promotion hero. That being said, he was never going to play a role in the second half of the season, so
yep.
I can't have too many qualms about it. I think he'll do well with West Brom, and he very well may take West Brom up, you know?
Okay. Best of luck to him. Giannis, thoughts on Stefan Johansson going out on loan?
I'm delighted for him. I mean, he always gave you lots of entertainment. You know, always at least one cynical challenge every 90 minutes. He was instrumental last year. He's not good enough for the Premier League. I think he knows that. We certainly know that. But he gets a chance to get some playing time. I think that's important. I don't have a bad word to say about him. I like West Brom. I hope that he helps them. And Max is right. He probably will help them get promoted. And good for him.
Okay, excellent.
Great guy, by the way. Me and Emilio met him after the Wolves match. Really, really nice
yes,
guy.
Yes, I remember you met him.
And a very, very nice guy. I mean, he's just a great person. And that's what I think a lot of Fulham fans love about him, is that he's a genuine guy, always fights for the cause. So, again, best of luck to him.
Okay, excellent. All right, before we officially move on and then we talk about the Brighton Hove Albion match, which hopefully will change the way we're thinking right now, put a little smile on our faces, I have to ask you both this. First, Giannis, to you, rate the window, but you have to include Ryan Babel in it.
Full of broken glass.
Okay.
I mean, if I was going to give it a rating,
give me a rating.
It's got to be, oh Jesus, 2. Am okay. I being generous here? I mean, I mean, Babel's going to be turn out to be an upgrade, for sure. But I mean, Northvite. I mean, I've been reading the comments of West Ham fans, and they're having they're blowing lots of bubbles right now. And in terms of Markovic. Liverpool fans on Twitter are underwhelmed. So we picked up Dud A. Well, not maybe not Dud A. Not like, you know, yep. He may have a point to prove, like Babel did, which is good.
Yeah.
But Markovic, unfortunately, is unless Mitro gets it in his ear, tells him in Serbian, do something or I'll beat you up. that may not, and that's really the only three, and that's poor dealing. Remember, up until this afternoon, we'd only signed one player
this
in
is
31
true.
Days. So, you know, are we surprised? I don't know. You bring back Berbatov.
Okay, so you give it a 2? Max, how about you?
And I'm being generous. I mean, I've been very generous to Ross.
No, yeah, I mean, Giannis, come on. I mean, a 2 is if we sign nobody. I think or if you sign only one player. I think we have 3 players. They're not all what we needed. You're right. There's some major, major deficiencies. But the fact of the matter is we got Babel, who, let's not forget, the first 2 matches have looked a massive improvement. He's a class player, okay? Nordvite, he's not going to be a world beater, but he is another option for defense in the field and center back, which we need. And I think Markovic really could surprise us. I'm going to say 4. 4.5. I mean,
okay.
It's not 2, but we still have gotten 3
I thought
players.
You were going to say 9. for a moment I thought you were going to, if you go 4, 4.5, that's still an average of 3.
No, it's not now, good. I'm with you. But, listen, it's just a rating, but I think 2, it's too low. It's not all that.
It's like asking for a bowl of rice and getting a grain. You know, it's, I, anyway. I think we're all softening up in our old age.
I understand there, Giannis. All right, let's move on. Let's spend about 15 to 20 minutes talking about the huge victory against Brighton Hove Albion. And this is going to be the post-match show part of this episode. So, Mr. Janaeus, I'm going to start with you. You and I were messaging back and forth during this match. And this was, as we say often, a match of two halves. I will say that these were almost two separate matches, Giannis, because it was almost like we were watching two completely separate games, you know, a game within a game. It was two separate halves, basically. So,
yeah, very much so. You know, first half, we had, I think it was seven or eight corners, but we let in, we conceded two goals, and I'm going to give Glenn Murray a lot of credit here.
He deserves it. Those were both great goals.
Yeah, they were. And, you know, for a 35-year-old to play at this level, to score goals, it's about movement and awareness. And Murray's always been very good at that. And they were two good goals. And it was, you know, the conditions were wretched. They've gone two up. They hadn't scored. You know, they hadn't won a game away from home since the Ice Age. And we just looked what we were. We looked wreckish. And then, of course, you know, Tim Ream gets subbed. And at halftime, the players get booed off. And then we may never know what Ranieri said at halftime. In fact, it would not surprise me if the person who was doing all the talking at halftime was actually Scott Parker and said, "Oi, you got this crowd here coming on this wet, miserable, even snow, what became snowy night. They're freezing their, you know, off. They're coming out and they're cheering for you. We're being laughed at by Brighton fans. And you've got to put in it. And this is a really poor shift. Give these fans something to go home happy about. Give them something to be proud of. Put an effort in." And then second half, we came out and we were magnificent. We really were. We ran them off the park. We scored four. We could have scored seven.
Yeah.
You know, post two crossbars.
Emilio said the match could have been 7-7.
Yeah. And, you know, I thought we were very, very good in the second half. And Chris Hughton's a coach I've got a lot of respect for. And I like Brighton's team. I think they're a very nice balance. And, you know, they definitely are a club that punches above their weight. But sure, it showed a lot of fight and spirit. And and the substitutions turned out to be very, very good. So it was a deserved win. But at halftime, none of us saw that coming.
I didn't, Giannis. And to be honest with you, at halftime, I thought Fulham's season was over. I'm not going to lie. That's how I felt at halftime, because I thought there was no coming back from that. So for them to do a complete 360 and win the match and the way that they won the match, it gives you hope. But there's obviously a lot of work that still needs to be done to survive this season, to stay in the Premier League. But now there's a glimmer of hope. That's what they gave us on Tuesday night, Giannis.
Yes, yeah, they did. They showed
the fight that we want to see.
That's exactly right, Russ. They decided to show some fight, and they showed an amazing, what a little bit of confidence will bring. Everybody put a shift in second half. Everybody really, I mean, and it was great to see players like, you know, Seri finally really showing up, tremendous quality.
That Mitchell was a team effort.
Oh, it was. And that's good news. Now, the question is, does one swallow make a summer? Well, we don't know. But it's a start, and it gives us something to look forward to. But it was right. what a great game of football. And what a weird, weird game of football that was.
It was. Max, over to you. Just your thoughts of what we watched Tuesday night.
Yeah, I thought, again, you guys said basically it all. A game of two halves, probably the prototypical game of two halves. What reminds me a lot of, you remember the Reading match? We were down 2-0, came back to win 4-2 in the championship days. That front line was the likes of Dembele, McCormack, and Kakanichlich shipped in. And, you know, on Tuesday was the likes of Mitrovic, Yeso, Chambers, Babel, all running riot. And it was a joy to watch. And it really was what a lot of people remarked. It was a return to Solis' way of football in many ways.
Yeah.
It was us attacking on the front foot. I mean, Kearney stroking passes, Ferry getting involved. I thought he had one of our best games yet for us.
The really passing was fantastic in the second half.
I'm going to single out one player. I actually wrote about him after the match in the boot room, and that's Luciano Vietto, who was probably the most unlikely figures I would have ever picked out to come off and impress. But because under Ranieri, he'd seemed frozen out. He'd gotten odd chances, I remember, against Leicester, against Burnley, but never really got in any matches, looked pretty forlorn of confidence. But he comes in and essentially, you know, runs the show and gets his first goal, and what a moment that was. And he added that quickness, that pace, that intensity. Yep. The quick passing, the good run that I think we all expected from him as Atletico Madrid loanee. And if he can play like that, if we can attack like that, I mean, that's really cause for optimism, because that blew away a very resolute-looking Brighton team, honestly, with ease. And we could have got, you guys are right, we could have scored 7. We also could have conceded 7, but we'll focus on the scoring, because that's what we're doing. And right. You know, we're getting more attackers. I think the game plan, honestly, is just attack every single match.
Yeah.
Because the defense is going to be terrible. We got no reinforcements, essentially. But the attack would be quite good.
Well, they certainly show that they have that ability. And that's what was encouraging about that second half. When you go down like that, I didn't see a way through all that mess. I didn't see them coming back from that. But they did. And Giannis, the first thought that came to mind, and maybe it's unfair, because I'm not saying this is going to happen again. Because for me, the Great Escape really took off away at Manchester City. They were down 2-0 at the half. Fulham were down 2-0 at the half against Brighton Hove Albion, and they just came back and won. Maybe it's a little wishful thinking on my part, but I thought of that Manchester City match. Giannis, your thoughts?
Well, I've gone back to watch that game, the replay, many times. I mean, 2-0 down at halftime. You know, I think Stephen Ireland had scored the first goal.
Yes.
We were dead and buried, and then it was Diamante Camara hit the shot through Joe Hart's legs.
Then, yep, I remember.
You know, Danny Murphy missing the penalty, but scoring on the rebound, and then
the rebound. Yep.
The brilliant breakaway by Camara. The brilliant, yep. Absolute electric pace. And it's something we'll never, ever forget. And it was reminiscent of that. It showed that we had some life. And the Fulham fans deserve a lot of credit here. And to be fair to them, they deserve the boo and have a go at the Fulham fans, the Fulham players at halftime, because it wasn't good enough. We looked like a sorry mess. And then second half, once we got Chambers got the first goal back, and by the way, what a brilliant knockdown by Mitrov. Absolutely wonderful knockdown. Then the fans, you know, they felt the momentum, and we became the 12th man. And the Brighton fans are all, you know, cock-a-hoop after 17 minutes when Murray was giving it large to the Fulham fans. Suddenly went very quiet. The Seagulls had lost their wings. And you know what? They went down very sorry down the A23 down at Brighton. And to be fair, they ended up being second best. So it was one of those games, Russ, where you'll go look back and go, God, do you remember when?
Yeah.
It was a memorable win for a lot of reasons. And if only because the first half was so miserable.
Good stuff there, my friend. All right. Just for time's sake, we're not going to go through the starting 11. We're just going to get right into it. And Mr. Cohen, I'm going to go to you and just talk about the first two goals here, because, again, it started the match off on such a sour note for Fulham. And glad that Giannis brought this up, because both goals by Glenn Murray, I thought, were very good goals in the third minute and then in the 17th minute. And then I want to go to you, Max, because I think we need to talk about this. I talked about it with Emilio on Full Time, and I don't think at the time he had a really good chance to take a look at the video of this. What were your thoughts when Dale Stevens only got a yellow? I thought this was a clear red.
Yeah, this has kind of become my my celebrated cause in the past couple of days, because I actually took the video off the NBC Sports stream that showed the best angle, and it kind of went viral. I got like over 100 retweets, probably my best tweet ever. The Premier League ended up taking it down due to copyright restrictions, but you know they can't hide the truth. And the truth is, that could have ended Andre Schürrle's career. I mean, that's a disgusting, despicable challenge. You look at it, and I have a freeze frame where Dale Stevens is nowhere near the ball. Schürrle actually nutmegs him. And Stevens comes through with his studs rate totally out of control and basically clamps on his calf area, on his calf, you know, shin area. He easily could have broken his leg. Schürrle was really lucky to escape serious injury. I think he might have come off at halftime due to that, due to the effects of that challenge. But if that's not a straight red card, I don't know what is. And again, another really great example of why we need VAR in the Premier League, because there's no way that call should be missed. I mean, that's just so blatant.
Totally agree. Giannis, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's an argument right there for, you know, retroactive punishment. It was a very, very poor challenge, and Max is right. It could have ended his career, and there's a few wags on social media who are probably dreaming that it would end his career. But the fact is, it was a red. I mean, he looked after the. He's not a malicious player, but he looked sheepish when the ref came over. I think we're all convinced it was going to be a red, and it wasn't.
Yep.
But I mean, it's usually a black and white call for me. But you know, the studs up is usually a no-brainer. Now, whether you got shin pads or not, and the shin pads saved him. I mean, there's no question. But it's still a red. There's still intent, and it should have been given. And you know, we've said it many, many times before. If you've got a referee, if you're going to be bad, be consistent. And unfortunately, he wasn't particularly consistent. But
no.
You know, I think. I mean, and to be fair, if this shoe was on the other foot, we'd say that. You know, we'd be very, very lucky to get away with it.
Yeah, we would say it. I think we would be honest and say that.
Yes,
if it was a foam player, man, that looked terrible. That wasn't. He was lucky to get a yellow, because in that case, it should have been a red. And let's go a little bit further in, because I want to talk about this, because Glenn Murray not only could have had a hat trick, he could have scored 4 to 5 goals, because he had some very good opportunities. In the 37th minute, his shot is saved by Rico, and I thought Rico came up big throughout the match. And then later on in stoppage time, Murray had a very good chance to score. So Fulham are down 2-0 at the half. And Max, I want to go to you, because Giannis and I have already really talked about our thoughts at halftime. What were your thoughts at halftime? Did you see a way through?
It was a sense of shock. You know, I mean, we see Fulham go down so many times this season, and you become numb to it. You know, I remember that was probably what it was like in the 2014-15 season when we just got relegated, and we looked like we were going to get relegated again from the championship, and the losses didn't even feel painful anymore. We just lost all feeling. So I just felt hopeless. I couldn't see us getting out of it because you're right, we got booed off at halftime. There's a little bit of a flourish towards the end of the first half, but the only real opportunity we had was Bobble's long-range effort. There wasn't a big push. And I did think at the end, you know, if there's ever a time for this team to show its true character, it's now. And miraculously, it happened.
It did. It totally did. And that's going to lead me to go right into the second half. And let's start here, Giannis, because Max already talked about Vieto. Vieto, I thought, played very well. What were your thoughts, though, when he came on for Schürrle at the beginning of the second half? Were you for that move?
No, I wasn't, because I'm in the Sessegnon camp, and I just think that Sessegnon's Ryan's age, that he needs to get some time, and he's lost some confidence. And the only thing I was thinking was, you know, maybe Bietta's had a good week in practice, because really, if you looked at that starting 11 on Tuesday, and you looked, the bench will tell you really everything you need to know. Cabano's not going to inspire. Aite will inspire even less. So really, what do you have? Vieta can produce something. And that's maybe the frustrating thing about Vieta. Because, again, he's inconsistent. He can do what he did on Tuesday and, you know, score a goal and look very, very lively. But then at Selhurst Park on Saturday, what Vieta are we going to get? And that's the mark of a good player, for me, is one that could put it in game in, game out. I think so many Fulham players could really take a leaf out of Mitro's book, because the one thing that really impresses me about what he does is that often he's put in positions where he has little support and gets little joy, but he never, ever stops working, and he can make things happen. And if you, every Fulham fan will appreciate a blue-collar effort, and that's what he brings to us every game. And Vieto has been really in and out. And with Schürrle, you know, you see that one, the goal against Burnley.
Yep.
You know, he does have some quality, but he can't defend a lick. And he's not very disciplined. He's not committed to defending, because I believe he doesn't believe he should defend. So, you know, to get out of the fight, everybody has to roll the sleeves up. And in the second half, everybody did that. And that's called teamwork. And
yes. Vieto, including Vieto.
Including Vieto. Absolutely. I mean, he did a job, and he did what he needed to do. And maybe this is that's a word for the wise, isn't it, really? It's just Ranieri can turn around and say, now, look, this is what happens when you do these things right. But I'm going to go back to my earlier point, guys. I think Scotty Parker had a big say in the halftime talk. I think he did the hairdryer treatment of players. Or he might have said something to Ranieri and said, can I do this after? Can I say something in my halftime? Because, you know, he was a passionate player. And I'm sure he tore a strip out of them and said, wait, this ain't good enough. And second half, we've come out a completely different team.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
It's pleasing. The question is, can we replicate this on Saturday?
Absolutely, Yanis. And I forgot to mention, also in the first half, you mentioned it earlier, Tim Ream coming off and Tom Kearney coming on, that was also a factor in this match as well. Turning point, because again, changed the shape, and but that was early in the first half. But then, of course, you have the, like I just mentioned, we just talked about the substitution. Then you have the goal very early on by Callum Chambers. They needed this goal, Max. Your thoughts about the goal from Callum Chambers?
Well, it was a rocket, and I had a funny story about it, because I was watching on my computer. I had my phone out as well. And normally I try to avoid looking at my phone alerts, because I have Fulham tweet notifications on, and the tweet
is
ahead of the stream, right? So I don't know how other international fans can relate to this, but I actually looked at my phone, because I don't know, the match reacted, and I saw Fulham tweet, yes, Callum, like, you beautiful man, or something like that. So that was probably 20 seconds before the goal happened. So I knew Callum Chambers was going to score, but I had no idea how. And let me tell you, I don't think in a million years I would have ever predicted he would have scored that way.
Yeah.
I mean, what a hit it was. I mean, basically, he plants his left foot and moves back his right foot. The technique on that is superb. And we've seen him had really good strikes. I remember most notably against Leicester that were really well saved. But that goal, I mean, what a release it was. And it came at the perfect time. I mean, literally a minute and a half after the second half starts, you couldn't ask for a better goal at a better time. And I was just really pleased for Callum, because I think he's been excellent ever since he moved to that center midfield role. He's been passionate. He's been really endeared himself to the Fulham fans. And I think he deserves that, you know, more than anyone else.
Okay, excellent. All right, Yanis, back over to you. In the 57th minute, you had the opportunity from Vieto, which goes over, but it was a great opportunity. But that obviously then leads up to the goal by Alexander Mitrovic. And let's talk about the first goal by Mitro, because for me, this is all effort by Mitrovic. Your thoughts?
Reminded me of Brian McBride. I mean, McBride in a Fulham jersey was everything and plus. And I when I saw that goal, I kept thinking of all the players I've come to respect and, you know, got to love as a Fulham fan over the years. And this is a player who, since the first moment he put a Fulham shirt on, has signaled his intent. And nobody can say otherwise. You know, Newcastle fans are humming and ahhing, but he said, I want to come here. I want to come to Fulham. And he's been magnificent. And that goal, I mean, the Brighton fans were unhappy with the defending. They were unhappy with the keeper. He's coming off his line. It was just sheer will. Just sheer will.
Determination, absolutely.
Yeah, determination. And it was a super goal, and it had been coming, because all of a sudden we started to expose their full-backs. And all of a sudden, Mitro, who didn't get a lot of joy in the first half with their centre-backs, was starting to really put himself about. Maybe it took a half to wear them down a little bit. But second half, he just rode them for lunch. And it was just a goal of sheer guts. And once that goal had gone in, I knew we were gonna get the points, simply because Brighton looked lost. I mean, as positive as they were in the first half,
they were shell shocked.
They were composed on the ball. They look organised, like every Chris Hughton team seems to be, and they looked very, very comfortable. They looked a shell of the team in the second half. We just ran them ragged, and it shows what a difference a bit of will can make, because I think I was wondering, Russ, you know, the reaction to the Spurs game. We played so well.
Yep.
And, you know, should we have, you know, should Rico have kicked it down the thing? Could we have just got a point? Blah, blah, blah. And it looked like, in many ways, the first half was a hangover from the disappointment at the end of the
potentially.
Yeah. We looked sorry for ourselves. But then, for whatever reason, we remembered the good things that, let's be honest, gave Spurs a lot of trouble at the Cottage.
Yeah.
And except this time, things came off for us. Things, we got a slice of luck. Things went our way, and we got a positive result out of it. And so I'm hoping that it's building a bit of more faith in terms of the players in each other, that they really are in the same ship. They have to stay in the same direction. And Palace is a chance for revenge, you know, after the first game of the season, where we all went in thinking, oh, we're going to beat this lot. This shouldn't be a problem. And they beat us, and they were probably the better side. So this is going to be a good game. And a good confidence second half. And I think nothing exemplified that more than Mitro's equalizing goal.
Totally agree. But, you know, after that, it just continued. The dominance continued. You have the shot by Severing the 66th minute. That was a very good opportunity. But here's a key moment that I think we should all just take a second to think about, you know, because it wasn't just about going forward. They still had to defend, and I just want to say Sergio Rico had to really save Fulham here, because in the 72nd minute, he had a save that changed the match once again, because if he doesn't make this save, I don't know if what happens after that happens, because that's how important I think the save was by Sergio Rico on another shot by Glenn Murray. Glenn Murray had four or five opportunities in this match, like I said, easily could have had a hat trick if it wasn't for Sergio Rico. So I want to mention that. And then that leads 2 minutes later, Max, over to you. The goal by Alexander Mitrovic. And what were your thoughts about this? This was set up by Joe Bryan. And there were some complaints by Lewis Dunk after this. But for me, this had more to do, like the first goal, the determination of Alexander Mitrovic wanting it more than Dunk.
Yeah, you know, who would have thought putting in crosses to Mitro would be a good strategy? I had no idea. No, I mean, it just shows the value of Joe Bryan in some instances, because he's one of the few players who can actually put in a really good cross in the Fulham team. Christie is certainly not one of them. But Bryan, you know, for all of defensive lacking, is very, very good at putting in crosses. And it was an excellent ball. It was a nice interchange between him and Bobble. Bobble showed good intelligence to cut it back to him, because Bryan had a much better angle. And it's just a picture-perfect ball. And listen, Lewis Dunk and Shane Duffy, those are two of the most physical defenders in the Premier League. And as you guys mentioned, Mitrovic had him in his back pocket that the entire second half. He was all over them. And they can complain all they want about him pushing them, but they would have been doing the exact same thing if they're up attacking a corner. And they probably manhandle strikers just as much. So I think for him to claim that, it was kind of funny to see, I think, Dunk on the floor protesting. A big, strong center back is just very much humbled by Mitrovic. Reminds me of what he did to Richard Stearman last season. You know, he has that knack. When he goes against strong players, he relishes the challenge, almost plays better because he knows that he can bully them and they'll be an equal fit, but at the end, he'll win out. It was just a great goal, and that's probably the goal I think I celebrated most up to the season, because that was just so satisfying. I mean, what a comeback it was. I mean, we just don't come back from deficits like that in the Premier League, you know, except for the Man City match. We don't have these big, thrilling comebacks. It's not what Fulham does, you know. So yeah, that was really precious to me. That was a special moment.
It was. Shortly after that, Joe Bryan goes off and Ryan Sessegnon comes on. And then Giannis, over to you. I'm going to give you the honors of the fourth goal for Fulham. Luciano Vietto scores, but this has to do, starts with the shot by Tom Kearney that hits the crossbar. He hit it twice. This is the first time he hit it. And then it ends up with going to Ryan Babel, and then it ends up with Vietto, and he heads it in. Thoughts on the fourth goal here?
Yeah, a little element of luck. I mean, Kearney's cut in on that lovely little left foot. He's cracked it. Keeper's beaten all ends up. And Babel's crossed it back in, and Vietto's almost an impulsive header. But I don't begrudge him that, because he put in a really good shift in the second half. You could see the joy and delight of scoring a goal, and that's going to give him a lot of confidence. And by that time, I didn't think they were going to come back. And that was really indicative of the pressure that we put on the whole of the second half. And go back to that third goal, Russ. The cross from Bryan for Mitro's second was decent. But Mitro really had to stretch and really had to put a lot of neck muscle power. That was a very, very good goal.
Yeah.
It wasn't the ideal cross. But to me, that was all Mitro's work. And it's, as Max has said, get crosses in. Get
Absolutely.
The bloody crosses in. He's going to get there. I
think Ranieri has been just really trying to get at them to get more crosses in the box.
Yeah, and this is part of the problem in terms of having your fullbacks. You know, you've got to have players. There's nothing worse than being a coach who doesn't have options. And unfortunately, if you look at the bench, you don't have many options. So, and right now, I'm just going back to the transfer deadline nonsense. Fosu Mensah is just, that thing has really put us behind, because now, if Ranieri's gone bollocks, you're not playing another minute this year. Christie is the de facto right back for the rest of the season.
That's right.
Unless Northvard goes into as a centre back role, you put Odoi right back, and I don't really fancy that. You've really got Cyrus Christie, unless you bring Stephen Sessegnon along. Okay, so there's an option there, or could you flip Ryan to the right? Possible, but you really want to push him further up the field. And this is where really you've got a chasm and you've got a lag. You needed to get that sort of cover.
Yeah. But
one of the things we've been crying for is fullbacks and wingers that can cross balls in the box for Mitro. Remember what McBride was like. You know, I mean, you always love that element. And that's why it's interesting, you know, looking at the deadline that, you know, well, a lot of people laughing at Peter Crouch going over to Burnley as part of a Sam Vokes switch to Stoke City. I think that's a very clever signing, because Burnley's fullbacks are decent crossers, and Crouch, through his height, can get to those balls. And so, you know, you play to your strengths. Mitro is our best player. So what is he like? He can hold the ball up, yes. He can knock the ball down. I can't talk enough about that first goal that Chambers scored. That knockdown by Mitro was just fantastic.
Yep.
And he's brilliant in the air. So Ranieri will be pissed off, because he's going to look and go, well, where are the crosses coming from? How are we going to score goals? So, but if Mr. Khan, if you're Tony Khan, or Mr. Khan, we'll call him Mr. Khan because I don't know him. But Mr. Khan, if you're listening to this, I hope you learn a lesson from this, because you really have to play to the strength of your best players.
Sure.
And provide the support that they need. And unfortunately, in this window, it hasn't, you know, Babel notwithstanding, hasn't quite worked.
Okay, very good there, my friend. Just want to mention, Fulham obviously see the match out, and it was a very rewarding 4-2 victory. And I was feeling great after that, guys. Unfortunately, 2 days later, we're doing this show, and I'm a little deflated for what you were just talking about, Giannis, the window. But you know what? I'm hoping that they can build on this, and we can see a really good performance against Crystal Palace. Before we do that, I want both of you to give me your man of the match. First to you, Giannis, man of the match.
Oh, man. Oh, I'm actually gonna get some stick for this one. I mean, I thought Mitro was absolutely magnificent, but I'm gonna give it to Seri.
I understand that.
Yeah, Seri had his best game in a Fulham jersey. I thought he was all over the park. He had a shot that hit the post. I thought he and Kearney worked well together in the centre park second half. And Mitra, as great as Mitra was, time to spread the love on this one. So I will give it to Seri, but with Mitra and Chambers as honorary mentions.
Okay. How about you, Max?
It's tough, you know. Not normally are we blessed with such a choice, you know, if he's man of the match award. It could have easily been Mitro, Seri, Chambers, even Canny, Vieto, but I'm going to go with the tried and tested one, and it has to be Alexander Mitrovic. Without him, we don't win this match. Simple as that. And he just brings he's our talisman. And, you know, special mention to him because he kissed the badge after that third goal. He celebrates in front of the Hammy end. That guy is filling through and through. And I think, you know, a year to the day since we signed him, we're very, very lucky to have his services at Craven Cottage.
Okay, excellent. All right, guys, it's time to preview the match against Crystal Palace. I know that they have a loan signing that's pretty significant. So they're probably feeling good, but they are missing a key player. And I think that's going to be a huge difference in this match. Giannis, over to you. Just your opening thoughts on the upcoming match on Saturday against Crystal Palace. I know that they just made the loan signing for a striker, but losing Zaha for me is massive, and I think that's an opening for Fulham.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I think that this was a game that I was actually looking forward to even before the Zaha thing, because I think, you know, I thought we underestimated Palace first game of the season.
Maybe.
And they showed tremendous professionalism.
It looked like a club that had been in the Premier League for a while. They looked professional.
Yeah.
Yes.
They looked seasoned. And they got the draw down at St. Mary's in the week. But to me, to be honest, they're a better team than their record suggests. I think they shouldn't be where they are right now, and this is not Roy, this is Roy Hodgson notwithstanding. They have got some very, very good players, and they're a team that are well organized, like every Roy Hodgson team is. But they play good football. They've picked up some notable scouts. We're not going to forget the Man City win for sure. Losing Zaha is going to be a problem. But they've got players, you know, like Ayew and Townsend that can cause us all sorts of bother. And you know, I happen to like their bench. When you've got players like, you know, Benteke and even Connor Wickham, who's just come back from a long, long layoff, and it's actually good to see him back. You know, they've got a lot of quality. But I'm expecting this is going to be a good game. I'm very intrigued to see which Fulham team shows up. If Hodgson's looking at the table, and I'm sure he is, he's probably going, well, to be honest with you, you know, we've got a team that's got quality, but we're 15th. And we're only, you know, 4 points ahead of Cardiff. And that's a better goal difference, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But they're in the dogfight.
Yeah, they
even Newcastle's win against City still keeps them in the dogfight.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a very important game for Palace. And it was sort of a double, you know, whammy for them, because if they got a win down at St. Mary's, you know, 26 points, they're going to 13th above Brighton, you know, decent shape. But the draw against Southampton makes things a little nervous. It's going to be a nervy game because they're tied with Burnley on goal difference, and Burnley is 17th. So it's a game where they know we're going to want revenge, and they're without their best player. And it's going to be very intriguing. I don't underestimate them. I do like their team. I really do. And I'm scratching my head as to why they only have 23 points. Having said that, it gives us a chance to get points down there. I'm not sure I can predict what's going to happen, because bloody hell, do we ever know what's going to happen with our lads? But I think it's going to be a good contest. I do.
Okay.
I think we'll put up a good fight.
I think we will too, Giannis.
It should be a good game.
Okay, very good. And I just want to mention the lone player that they added from Chelsea, the striker Michy Batshuayi. And he's a dangerous player. So I understand why fans are now, oh, well, they – I know they lost Zaha, but they just – evened it out by adding Batshuayi. I don't see it that way because I think Zaha is extremely important to them. Batshuayi can help them, but again, will he be ready to go? Maybe. We'll see. I think losing Zaha hurts Crystal Palace in this match. Maybe I'll be wrong. We'll see what happens. Max, your opening thoughts.
I think we've developed this kind of a little bit of a rivalry with Palace, not necessarily based on the pitch, but kind of fan bases are having at it. You know, a lot of them giving a stick for clappers. Then the old picture comes up of their clappers from however many years ago. They're being a bit hypocritical. They see themselves as kind of almost, I think, taking our mantle. You know, after we left the Premier League, I think Palace, in many people's minds, occupied the role Fulham did. A nice club from South London. You know, everyone's kind of second team. Good family club. They're always going to kind of finish mid-table. And I think the council is threatened by us, honestly, now that we're back in the Prem with them. We need the win. And this team has been very two-faced. I think they can go out and beat a team like City, draw a team like Arsenal, and then turn in pretty abject performances against teams, you know, with them in the league, you know. We've seen the match against Southampton is an example of that. I know they've gone other places and gotten underwhelming results. And their biggest thing this season is a lack of goals. They rely too much on Zaha. Townsend can catch form, but he's inconsistent. Now Batshuayi, I doubt he'll start. Benteke has been out of form for ages. Wickham just coming back. But this isn't a very creative attacking team. But one thing that you guys mentioned, Giannis, said perfectly, they're professional.
Yeah.
They're managed by Roy. They know what it takes to win in the Premier League. They're very streetwise. And we saw that when they beat us 2-0 the first game of the season. They know how to soak up pressure and hit teams and score when it matters. So it's going to be a tough match. I mean, this is, again, a very streetwise experienced team. Everyone on that side is chock full of Premier League experience. But listen, if we play the way we did in the second half against Brighton, we need a 90-minute performance. But if you can play that attacking manner, I don't think they'll be able to contain us.
Okay, excellent. All right, guys. Let's go through some matchups. I want to do this a little bit differently. I'm going to go to each one of you for a matchup. Giannis, I'm going to start with you. Fulham are on attack. Crystal Palace is defending. Who do you give the advantage to?
I think it's a pick 'em. I think it's a pick 'em. I think that the one thing about Palace's back four is they're pretty well organized, and they don't tend to let soft goals in, and that's why I think, you know, looking at the Zaha thing will you know, for public consumption, Hodgson said he won't condone Zaha's red card.
Yep.
But behind closed doors, he'll be absolutely seething because he's lost his best player for a big game on Saturday, and it's through sheer bloody petulance.
Yep.
That's the only reason. And there's really no need for it. You know, it's going to depend a lot for me how they're going to set up. You know, Van Aanholt and Tompkins probably play in the middle. Are they going to, you know, that'll be the one of the issues. Although, you know, Tompkins came off late against.
He did.
Yeah, for Dan. And I'm wondering if there was an injury. I do like Tompkins. I liked him at West Ham. Is that going to have an impact? I didn't see anything in the Hodgson. Well, I've not heard anything in terms of Hodgson saying that in terms of injury issues for Saturday. If they lose Tompkins, right, that's a big loss. I think it's a pick 'em. I think the thing that might swing it for us is the momentum from the Brighton game. We've got a maximum, you know, road support there. Should be a
huge confidence. Atmosphere. They should have huge confidence going forward.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a short journey across London for the fans. And they'll be very, very excited. And it should, you know, it should be a bumper crowd. And hopefully we'll carry the momentum of what happened on Tuesday night, because Palace will be very disappointed that they couldn't have got 3 points out at St Mary's, because they'll know that was a very winnable game.
Right. And I also want to mention this, Giannis, is that they're playing three matches in a very short period of time. I think that's a factor in this as well.
Yeah. But then for that to work, we've got to get off to a flyer. We can't get off to a sleepy though start like we did on Tuesday night, because unlike us being at the cottage, you know, the Palace fans will have plenty to say, and they will be Palace fans. A number of Palace fans are nervous right now because of where they are on the table, and an early goal will really set the cat amongst the pigeons. They're not, you know, they know they've got a team that's good enough to avoid the drop. But when can you ever legislate for a Newcastle beating City? You can't. And for those results to come, for those results to happen, you know, you've got to realize that every dog has its day. So they will look at this and say, well, we should get 3 points. They've not won away from home this year. They leak like a sieve. We should have some joy here. But if we go a goal up on them, then, you know, I think the home support will start getting restless.
Okay, excellent. Max, over to you. Let's flip it. Crystal Palace's attack versus Fulham's defense. Now, their attack isn't the greatest. We know about Fulham's defense. Is this a push?
Who knows? I mean, the way we played this season, I don't think we can ever give our defense the advantage. And Palace still have a lot of dangerous players. I think Townsend, he's inconsistent, yes, but I can really see his pace troubling our center backs. I also think, you know, Jordan Ayew, he's been pretty consistent, but he does have an eye for goal in recent matches.
Yep.
He's kind of caught a bit of form after a really bad start on loan from Swansea. And Benteke, I mean, this guy, he's not the player he was at Villa. He's not half the player he was at Liverpool. He's very much washed up. I honestly don't rate him anymore. I think he'll be easy to deal with. And, of course, Mo Zaha, that is who their attack is really built around. So
if there's
ever the perfect time to play Palace, it's now. That being said, we don't really know how fully fit Batshuayi will be. I'm going to say slight advantage, however, to Palace, just because we've gone over how deficient our defense is, and it hasn't gotten much better. So I still think they will have the slight upper hand.
Okay, excellent. Giannis, over to you. Who's the advantage in central midfield? Because this is sometimes where the match can be won.
Ooh, what a great question. It's gonna depend on who we start. If he plays Serie alongside Kearney, doesn't play Kearney out wide.
Yeah.
With Chambers holding.
Yeah.
I think we've got the edge if they can carry the momentum from Tuesday night. I think we could have some joy. But the one thing about Ranieri that baffles is that we never thought we'd live to see the day of Felix Magath bingo. But Ranieri, you never know what he's up to half the time.
Yeah.
Now, if he's bright, he'll go, well, that second half told us everything we need to know. We keep going back to the well. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And it's my hope that he will do the same thing and not just, you know, decide he's going to start Floyd Aite. And that might be, you know, that might be a little extreme.
But,
you know, what I'm saying, where he put, he puts one out from left field and you go, what's he doing there? I think the players will expect that as well. They'll expect the same 11 that went out there second half.
Yep.
Which means that Schürrle will not start, which means that Vieto will start, which means that Kearney will start.
And it'll be a flat back four.
Well, yeah. I mean, at some point, you know, there's two ways you look at this, but if you look at what's just happened today with the deadline, I think Ranieri's got to look back and say, okay, we don't have defenders. I need to somehow create a system that's going to somehow maximize what little we have. And a flat back four may be the way to go. Where you go a 4-4, well, you know, even a, I don't know, it could be a 4-4-2, a 4-1-3, you know, 4-1-3-2.
Yeah.
You know, a 4-1-4-1. 4-1-4-1, could it work? Yes, it could. With Mincha as your lone guy, although Babel coming into the lineup has presented a little bit of a conundrum, because you really have to start him. But the problem with Babel is going to be, is he ever going to be good enough defensively to track back? And that's the problem. That's the question mark that's often, that, you know, levied against Schürrle, in which case you really have to play with two. But then Babel happens to be good out wide. And then if you've got someone, you know, if Vieto is going to feel aggrieved if he doesn't start, and then Markovic, I mean, tomorrow's the walkthrough. Markovic really won't start Saturday. He's got no chance to show what he can do on the field. But it's a conundrum. I think he just has to maybe slightly tweak this formation to get the best out of the team shape. Because in the first half against Brighton, it didn't work. And when he switched things around at half time, then it did. And I think he just has to stick to that recipe.
Okay, excellent. Max, quickly over to you. This is a fascinating one. Who is the coaching advantage?
Oh, it's tough. I mean, Roy Hodgson is a football legend. He's a legend in English football, honestly. I think what he's gotten out of this Palace team, I think we give him a lot of credit, but on the face of it, there are a lot of has-beens in that team. There are a lot of players who he's really gotten the most out of. And I think that's just due to his man management, his experience. Ranieri, of course, you know, has done great things. He's probably entered the best Premier League title in history. But at Fulham, we haven't necessarily seen that all the time. And he's made some suspicious decisions. You know, most notably his, I think the biggest one for me is how he's doing with Sessegnon. I think that's a mistake. Also, his insistence in playing Cherlo is also a mistake. I think you really have two disparate views. One is the Tinker Man in Ranieri, and one is Hodgson, who loves consistency and stability. And I think in the modern Premier League, in these types of matches, stability, consistency is going to win the day. So I'm going to go with Hodgson here.
Okay, excellent. All right, guys, to finish the show, this is my section I call Three Keys to Victory. I'll get both of you to give me your three keys to a Fulham victory. But before we do that, Giannis, I'm going to go to you because I always like to get the view of the opposition. So I'm going to ask you, I'm going to put you in the shoes of Roy. How does his team win this match? What would you do?
I wouldn't do anything different than what I normally do. I'd just keep it nice and cagey and understand that we're going to bring a lot of energy in the hopefully in the first 20, 25 minutes and try and frustrate us. And then they've got the quality that can cause us a lot of trouble. So, I mean, Hodgson, we all know that Hodgson's all about, you know, repetition.
Right.
I don't expect a lot different. Even with the loss of Zaha, you know, he's going to say it's only one player. Don't do anything different than, you know, United do.
Stay the course.
The first game of the season. Yeah. And that's, you know, Hodgson will be a legend forever in our eyes. Ranieri has earned legendary status for what he did at Leicester. And Chelsea. I mean, yep. Chelsea fans still love him. But just be disciplined and the chances will come because we're leaky.
Okay, excellent. All right, Max, over to you. I'm going to put you in the shoes of Claudio Ranieri. What would be your starting 11 and the formation you would use if you were him?
Oof, this is a tough one. First off, flat back four. We played excellent against Brighton with that formation. And you must go with that. So, you know, Rico in goal. I think LaMarchand Ndoye, that's probably the safest bet. I don't think Nordvik is going to be fit or ready to come back in that quick. You got to go Brian on the left, Chris on the right. As much as you don't love it, that's what we have. And then the center midfield three, I'm going to say we have the two holdings are going to be Chambers and Ferry. I'd love to see Kearney play as kind of the attacking center midfielder, almost. You know, last season it was K-Mac, Stefio, Kearney.
Yep.
I think we can do Chambers, Sarri, Kearney. I think I'd really love to see Kearney's central role. Please don't play him out wide, Claudio. Please.
Okay.
And then up top, I think you have Mitrovic, you have Bob on the left, and then I would go Vieto on the right.
Okay. Very good. Very interesting. Okay. All right, guys. Now it's time for three keys to victory for Fulham here. Giannis, I'll give you the honors. Give me the three keys for them to getting all 3 points. What do they have to do here?
Don't drink sarin before the game. three keys to the game. Feed off the energy. Well, I think number one, feed off the energy of your fans and the Brighton game. So use that momentum. Number two, stay disciplined and focused, which means none of the individual's silly little mistakes. And number three, fight. And I think, you know, the number one should come because we should be confident. The number two is the one I feel sorry for Ranieri because you can throw as many bombs as you want. But what has killed us has been individual errors.
Yeah.
And they have to be cut out. And number three, if the second half against Brighton taught us anything, it's that where there's a will, there's a way. And we fought hard. And we wanted the win, and we got the win. So have we got to a point where, in a way, the pressure could be off? Because we've been said, oh, we're doomed. And so even look at a team like Huddersfield. Huddersfield have 11 points. they're as good as done. But that makes them a dangerous team because they've got nothing to lose. And we're still a bit adrift, but in a way, we've got nothing to lose.
Right.
And in the same time, we could get a result that all of a sudden really drags Palace back into the mire. So let's fight. Let's go. Let's really fight. Let's give our away fans, let's give them something they've not seen all year, an away win. Here's a
I'm
thing.
There with you.
And this is a great opportunity to get.
I totally agree, Giannis. I started the show by saying that this is a great opportunity. I totally agree with you.
For sure. Let's do it.
It's there
let's
for them.
Let's get 3 points.
Okay. Very good. I'll get your prediction in a second. Max, over to you. Give me your 3 keys to victory.
Get Mitrovic involved. When he does well, we do well. That's just obvious. If he doesn't get service, comes isolated, we'll struggle. Get Kearney on the ball. Some of the best attacking play on Tuesday was when Kearney was involved. You know how influential he can be. And he has a point to prove. And he's really stepped up to the challenge in the attacking sense. That's number two. And number three is don't go behind early. Don't make it hard on yourself. If we can see the first goal, you know, within the first 5 minutes, like we did against Brighton, we're just giving ourselves a mountain to climb. If we can keep this game at 0-0 for as long as we can and try to nick it second half with a big push like we did against Brighton, that's how we're going to win, I think. So just try to keep it close early, limit individual mistakes. That's going to be my 13.
Okay, excellent. Right back to you. It's time for your prediction for this match.
Ooh. I'm going to say Palace 1, Fulham 2.
Okay.
Nervy win.
Wow.
See some late drama. And I'm going to predict Bobble to get his first home goal as the winner.
Wow. Over to you, Mr. Janaeus. What's your prediction?
I think it's going to finish 1-1. I think it's going to be a very good game. And I don't necessarily think that 1-1 will be a bad result.
Okay.
I think we can win. I think Zaha is a big loss for them. But we always find ways of shooting ourselves in the foot.
I agree with that.
So I'm going to say a draw.
Okay.
I'm going to say a draw. And if we get a win, it's a massive boost to this club.
Totally
it would be a tremendous result. But I'm going to play it safe on this one and say we're going to get a draw.
Okay, and I understand why you're doing that. I'm going with Max. I'm going 2-1 to Fulham. I'm going for another brace for Alexander Mitrovic. He's hot. He is feeling it. I'm going for a 2-1 victory led by Mitro. All right. Great show, guys. This was a long show. Like I said, it's 3-1, but you guys were great. Mr. Janaeus, thank you so much for doing this tonight.
I feel like I've just run a marathon. But
Max,
it's been a wonderful show. Isn't it amazing to be, well, not just a Fulham fan, any sort of fan, that really in the space of 96 hours,
yep,
you've got two massive games, end of transfer window. And I must admit, I'm having a lot of fun watching social media right now because Fulham fans are just hopping. But remember,
yep.
Remember, we've got 36 hours from now. We have to get our focus back on because we've got a big game against the Palace.
Absolutely. That's why we're ending talking about the big match. Max, thank you as always for joining me, my friend.
It was a pleasure, guys. You know, Giannis is right. We ran the marathon, but the toughest is yet to come. Saturday is going to be a long, long day. That's going to be a very long 90 minutes. But
yeah.
I think we'll know a lot more about the second half of the season come full time. We're going to know if this team has the fight that they need to stay in this division. I'm just looking forward to it. You know, you get the excitement. I say it's before every match. No matter how bad we're doing, you still get that excitement before kickoff. And, you know, that's what we all love about football. So, you know, let's do it. Let's get 3 points.
Okay, excellent. Great show, guys. But it is time to wrap it up. For my co-hosts, Giannis Janaeus and Max Cohen, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.